Over the past decade, numerous major hurricane strikes on the state of Florida, like Irma, Michael, Ian, Helene, and Milton, have shown us how we build matters. We can go into communities after a major hurricane strike, see two communities side by side that fared these storms in very different manners. We're going to talk about that on this episode of the GeoTrek podcast, How We Build Matters. We're going to be looking specifically at stories from the state of Florida. Hey everyone, this is Hurricane Hal, host of the GeoTrek podcast. On the GeoTrek podcast, we explore the world to bring you stories about extreme weather and natural disasters not covered by the mainstream media. Make sure you like, follow, and subscribe our content wherever you listen to podcasts. And also check out our YouTube channel. Not only do we have a lot of GeoTrek podcasts, we have recent live streaming of hurricane events and extreme weather events around the world. If you're following and liking our content, you're going to make sure that you do not miss any latest updates from GeoTrek. On this episode of the GeoTrek podcast, we feature George Siegel, an award-winning documentary filmmaker and former TV journalist who builds impact through story. As founder of Move the World Films, George tackles resilience, housing, and system failures with a solutions lens. Credits include the award-winning Built to Last, Buyer Beware, and The Last House Standing. So let's talk about this. The Last House Standing was George's really epic documentary after Hurricane Michael in 2018. And he's offering a special offer for our listeners. If you go to the link in the show notes and you leave a review, the first 10 people to do that are going to get a free pass to see The Last House Standing. The password that you're going to use for that is called Hurricane Hal Special. That's Hurricane Hal Special. And again, that's to get a free pass to watch The Last House Standing. His more recent release, Built to Last, Buyer Beware, is coming out right now on PBS and many different platforms. It's an amazing film. I was sitting on the edge of my seat, and we're going to be talking about that today on the GeoTrek podcast. George, thank you so much for taking time to come on the GeoTrek podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I've never done a podcast with somebody with such a cool nickname, Hurricane Hal.
Well, there you go. And it's going to relate because you're a documentary producer. We're going to get into your hurricane and your Building Better documentaries, but let's step back a little bit. How did you get involved in creating documentaries?
Well, in the beginning, I was a television weatherman, and I was also an anchor and a reporter. And I covered stories of disasters. And so when I got into the production business, I thought, well, why don't I make a documentary film about disasters? Because it's so sad when they happen time and time again. And I wanted to try to wake people up and show them that there are paths you can take to improve your chances when a disaster hits, but you have to do something.
Well, this makes sense now. When I was looking at some of your hurricane work, I'm like, man, this person has a really good eye for detail of what happens in a disaster. It sounds like it was not your first rodeo and you've been around this type of theme before.
I have, and it's different victims, same story, which is just tragic each time because people are shell-shocked. They can't believe it happened to them. And there's this feeling when you roll up on a disaster of it's just eerie. It's just everything's really quiet. People are in shock. They just weren't prepared for what happened to them. And so you try to capture some of that, but also give people something that they can use to try to improve their chances in a disaster.
George, when you step foot in a disaster zone as a producer, I mean, like, so how do you even have a path forward, right? You want to produce things, but then there are these people around you that are suffering. And I could tell from your work, you're very empathetic. I mean, do you have a plan going in, or do you just kind of like take it moment by moment and just feel it out?
Well, your plan is to be empathetic. You know, you don't want that gotcha moment at a time of a disaster. It's not like you're walking up to an official who is an ass and you're trying to show the world that that's who it is. These are victims. They're already suffering. So I'm very respectful. I ask them if they feel like sharing their story. And if the answer is no, I don't do any follow-up on that. That's cool. I'm sorry. If there's anything we can do to help you, please let us know. And then you move on and find people that are in a place where they want to talk about what happened. Because in a documentary, you have to get everybody to sign a release to be in your film. So you can't really sandbag anybody. And I can't even imagine why somebody would want to do that to a victim.
Yeah. And George, I'd imagine you find some people that absolutely do not want to talk, and probably others almost find it therapeutic to share their story, right?
Yeah, I was at the 1989, this shows how old I am, so I'm embarrassed about this, the 1989 earthquake game in the World Series. And I was covering that. And then we had to go into town and interview people. And people were angry and yelling at us, saying, get out of here, get out of our town. You're just here for the disaster. So you have to be sensitive to that. I mean, people are not at their best after those moments. And so if they don't want to talk, they don't want to talk. If the ones that do, you need to be a good listener and let them talk.
Yeah, for sure. And it sounds like you're pretty good at kind of feeling that out and kind of being there appropriate in the moment. Well, George, you and I were talking about this documentary that you produced called Built to Last, Buyer Beware. Share with us a little bit about the inspiration behind this recent documentary that you created.
Well, my first film in the disaster realm was called The Last House Standing. And I only mention that because that's what led to Built to Last, Buyer Beware. I wanted to make a second disaster type film, but actually give people steps in that film to improve their chances in a disaster. So the whole theme of the film is we use the analogy of a roulette wheel that spins, that has all the things on it that are bad and one little tab of good, yet everybody slides all their chips in. They spend all their money on that house. They spend a fortune. That's their biggest investment. But how much do they really know? How much are they really prepared for disaster? So it was a real try at waking people up and having them see that we need to be a little more on top of the decisions that we make, because we can't rely on anybody looking out for us.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I love that perspective that there's a lot of things that can go wrong, especially if you're in a disaster prone area. What are some of the main themes that stood out to you as you developed this film?
Well, the first one is most people know nothing about the house that they're buying beyond the eye candy. When you buy a house, you're more interested in the granite countertops. Is there a park nearby? Is there a pool for my kids? What's the space like for the kids to play upstairs? Most people don't get into the weeds and really ask, how was this house built? To what standard was it built? What hazards could it survive? Some people move into a house and then they're surprised when it rains that water's pooling in the street in front of their house because they never went by on a rainy day. They didn't walk around the neighborhood and ask questions. You almost have to be a detective and sleuth out what could possibly go wrong with that house. The other thing that people do all the time is a builder will give you his list of references of the happy customers. Those aren't the ones you want. You want the ones he's not giving out. Because I'm sure there's a list there for a lot of people of complaints, of things that didn't go well, that things they weren't happy about. And inevitably, at least in my experience, anything I didn't ask about or plan about comes back to bite me every time.
Well, that's true. And that's probably true for if a disaster hits, but it can be true for anything, right? I mean, we really need to, if you will, like look under the hood of what we're buying. And it sounds like you're saying a lot of folks don't do that due diligence to really look in depth at what they're purchasing.
They don't. And when you start finding the little stuff, then that makes you wonder about the big stuff. So when you find where maybe the flooring doesn't come all the way up to the wall, or the windows aren't plumb or something, okay, now we're getting into things that could actually affect the safety of that house if the window wasn't put in properly. Did they really put concrete block on both floors? Is there any place that water got in that can degrade the walls of the house so they blow in? How is the roof done? You know, once you find one little thing, to me, all bets are off. And it's like, okay, what next? And then you really have to sleuth that out. And most people don't want to do that because it costs money to have an inspection. So you might spend a few hundred extra bucks inspecting something, but that could save you everything you just put into that house. So it could be the best money you ever spent.
George, what kind of guidance can you give for people that maybe aren't that savvy with construction? I mean, would it be really going and finding a reputable home inspector to kind of come alongside you and to look at it through their eyes, perhaps?
Sure. But there's also resources you can use. The first thing you should do is go on FEMA.gov and look at the FEMA maps and see what the flooding possibility is. I interviewed Brock Long in The Last House Standing. He's the former FEMA director. And he made this comment that stuck with me forever. It's like, if it rains where your house is, it can flood. So everybody needs to be prepared for that. So you can look on the FEMA website and see what flood zone your house is in. You can call the local floodplain manager. You should check with the city and see what projects they've done to make that neighborhood safer or better. And then investigate the builder. With ChatGPT, there's so much information you can dig up on people. And become a sleuth. Don't fall in love. You know, if you fall in love in anything too quickly, quite often you end up paying for it.
So take well, that's your time. Right. And all of a sudden we can check our mind at the door because we love the granite countertops or the swimming pool out back. And all of a sudden we get sucked in emotionally, right, to buying this thing that's at high risk.
Yeah, I mean, real quick story. I did in the last house standing, I went to Moore, Oklahoma, where they had 8 big tornadoes that majorly damaged Moore as a town. So they finally decided to change the building code, and they made houses safer so they would do better at surviving tornadoes. And I was interviewing a home builder, and I said, so how much did this add to the price of a house to make these changes? And he said, the price of granite countertops in the house. And I said, so if it wasn't a code change and people had the choice, what do you think they would do? And he goes, they would probably still choose the granite countertops. And when you think about that, that's insane. Gee, I could have my house destroyed by a tornado and maybe have a different counter, or just bite the bullet and do both, but don't cut back on the safety thing. If somebody said, hey, Hal, you could have this new Mercedes, but you can't have seatbelts with it, you'd think they were crazy.
Well, that's it, right? You're getting whatever, some perks, but the risk is too high. It sounds like you're saying just, you know, to really consider that risk and don't lose sight of that just because you like the way it looks on the outside or the way that the features you have on the inside.
Yeah, you got to care more about the ingredients than the icing every time, because that's what's going to keep you afloat, you know. And the thing that we talk about, victims in a disaster, people losing everything, when your house gets wiped out by any kind of disaster, the very wealthy people, they can't get back their possessions, the heirlooms, the things that matter maybe to them deeply, but they have the money to recover in some cases. A lot of people who are just tightly mortgaged into that house that put all their money in, their lives could be ruined forever. It could take 5 to 10 years or forever to recover. So you really have to think about this stuff on the front side, because we can't sit there and hope that our officials are going to change the building code to suit us. And builders that say they build to code aren't building for the future. You're buying that house for the future.
You're spot on with that, George. And, you know, I was thinking, I did field work in Hurricane Laura, a vicious hurricane in southwest Louisiana in 2020. And I came across cases where subdivisions next to each other, one of them is shredded with roofs off, the other one 100 yards away, untouched. And you're like, they have the same code here, right? So just looking at the code alone isn't enough. Like you were saying, you really need to consider who built this and how did they build it. And when we see these side-by-side subdivisions that perform very differently, it shows us how we build really does matter, right?
Well, a great example is Habitat for Humanity. You know, a lot of people think, there's just some people out there helping build a house. They're throwing up a house. They put so much effort and detail into making that house safe with the extra nails they put in, the attention to detail, the fact the homeowner's there helping build it and actually cares about this house. And those houses during Hurricane Michael in the panhandle of Florida held up better than some of the expensive houses. So extra nails, having studs closer together. I mean, I'm not a construction expert, but I see what works and what doesn't work. And those things matter.
So it sounds like you're saying it's not necessarily that the most expensive houses will do better. It's more about how they're put together and the practices involved.
Well, I live in Tampa, Florida, and there are houses down the street from me that are on the water that are selling between $5 and $10 million. And some of those builders do concrete block on the first floor and wood on the second floor. And I'll call the builder and say, why did you put wood on the second floor? And they go, well, that's what the homeowner wanted. And I said, but you're the builder. Why don't you tell them that's a bad idea? And they don't do that. You know, that's an industry that they're in. We have conflicting goals in a construction project. Their goal is to make money. My goal is to have a house that lasts forever. Those two don't always meet.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of times they're at odds with each other. George, I wanted to ask you, how do we get to the place where we're at today where so many millions of people are at high risk from natural disasters?
Well, first of all, people are living in more dangerous areas. You know, Rob Moore of the NRDC said, it's not always the hurricane that causes the problem. Maybe it's people are living in places that they were never meant to live in. So you choose to live in a more dangerous spot, you're taking on a huge risk. People that live on Sanibel Island, it's an island that's level. You know, when you get 10, 12 feet of water, everything's going to be underwater. So it really comes down to, if you're going to take that risk, you need to build better. But the building industry is a huge industry that has a big lobbying industry that spends a lot of money on politicians. Same with the insurance industry. So those two factors make the homeowner, you have no chance if you don't do your work. If you don't ask a million questions and you don't sometimes say, hey, I'm going to choose the safer area. I may have to drive 20 minutes to the beach, but I'll have a house to leave from and come back to. And that might be the better choice.
Yeah, George, it almost seems like the system is set up like if you don't do your work, you could get drug into this really broken system, so to speak.
That's exactly what happens. And well, that's what I would say with most people happens when they buy a house. And a lot of times it doesn't affect you because you get lucky. And sometimes luck is all it is. That's why I use the roulette wheel. You know, there's very little skill in that game. You're not spinning the wheel and doing something special. You're not counting cards or anything. So you really are relying on things going well. When things go well, it's great. Nobody wants to do anything and worry about things on a sunny day. We all worry once the storm is approaching and it's about to hit us. It's very hard to think when you're panicking. I mean, I was in TV news where you'd have a live shot and I'd be out in hurricanes and all craziness going on around you. Your brain doesn't work the same way as when you actually, you know, if I said, Hal, you got 2 minutes to grab everything from your house that you care about, you probably would sit there paralyzed just thinking, what do I get? What do I get? As opposed to having a list of your valuables. So you planned ahead to have a go box and a disaster plan. So it's planning. It's taking the time to make sure your house is right. And if not, don't reward mediocrity. Find something that is right.
George, a lot of times you hear people say if a system is broken and it perpetuates, somebody's winning. Like somebody wants to keep it broken, right? So who are the players here that are winning in this broken system? I mean, if everyone wanted it to desperately change tomorrow, it would change. Who's winning from this broken system?
I think builders and the insurance industry are the big winners. I mean, the insurance industry claims they lose money. There's books about how they don't. I mean, their goal in a disaster is not to pay you. Imagine that's your biggest fallback when you buy a house. You go, I have insurance, I'm covered. They're looking for ways to not pay you, especially if it's water versus wind and it's two different policies. You could be fighting with these guys forever. Now, there's reputable people. There's good people in every industry. There's great builders out there. But why do they spend so much money to have the codes lower? Why is it such a big deal? Why is there insurance reform? Here in Florida, if I have to sue my insurance agency because they're not paying my claim, and I win, I still have to pay my lawyer, maybe up to a third of what I got, because they took away my right to get damages. And that's completely ridiculous. So an insurance company can bully you, then they can outlast you so you don't have the money to fight them. And if you do, you don't have the money to fix your house. So the whole game is really stacked against the person who the home buyer. And that's why I tell people, you need to do the work. It may not be the sexy, fun thing to do, but who's looking out for you? I guarantee you the construction industry and the insurance industry may be great. You may get a winner. Are you going to bet everything on that?
So, George, would you recommend that people do more due diligence up front? I mean, obviously, insurance is a good safety net, but do you feel like sometimes people rely too much on insurance and say, well, if I build in a high-risk area or my house has some issues with it, insurance will come and save the day? Would you say maybe do more due diligence up front so you don't have to rely on that safety net as much?
Absolutely, and I've never met anybody, and I like to think I know a fair amount of people that read their insurance policy. So nobody knows what's in that insurance policy until you need it. And then the lawyers that were in the film, the lawyer, David Murray, tells me stories about people finding out that there was a named storm exclusion, or if the boat's on a dry dock and it gets destroyed, you only get half, or they'll outlast you because they know they don't have to pay the claim. They'll keep switching adjusters on you. So all the things that can go wrong are things you can mitigate by having a house that's built well. Once you have to make the claim, all bets are off, rather. And once your house is damaged, your life is in a spiral because you have no roof over your house. Somebody drives by and wants to throw a tarp on and they're going to charge you $10,000 to stop the water from coming into your house. I mean, once you're a victim, the cockroaches come out.
And yeah, it starts spiraling pretty quick, right?
Yeah, and that's horrible.
George, to paraphrase one of my favorite quotes from the film, I think it was said, the big print giveth, the small print taketh away, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That concept, though, you know, a lot of times it becomes difficult for an ordinary citizen to understand everything in that fine print. And you're sounding like, it sounds like you're saying in the film that a lot of folks can get blindsided, even if they think they know what they have.
They do get blindsided. But if you took that policy and just ask somebody to explain it to you, let me clearly understand my coverages. And it's hard. Florida, the cost of insurance here is ridiculous. And it's very hard to get enough insurance. I mean, you have a 2% deductible if there's a hurricane. So if you're living in a $500,000 house, the first $10,000 of the disaster is out of your pocket. A lot of people don't have $10,000 sitting on the shelf just waiting to fix their roof or get things back to normal again. It's very difficult. And, you know, we had two hurricanes that affected us here last year, Helene and Milton. And just seeing how my neighborhood was wiped out. We live it every day when we walk around, seeing all the houses that are being torn down. Imagine what it's like for those people. You know, we were lucky.
George, let's take a little mid-show break here. You have a very special offer for our listeners. What's this offer that you're going to pitch their way?
Yeah, we're putting a link in your show notes. And if people go to visit that, they can watch my documentary film. The first 10 people that jump on this, you leave a review if you liked me, if you didn't like me, that be honest in your review, 5 stars only. And then what you do is you get a passcode that you're going to put in the show notes that they can watch the film for free. It's called The Last House Standing. It was shot right after Hurricane Michael. So it shows damage here in Florida. We went to Oklahoma, California, showing different disasters. And I hope people take advantage of it. And if you miss out and you're not the first 10, you can always rent the film. And still leave a review. We won't stop you.
Well, I think people will be scrambling to do that. You know, they're going to enjoy this. And what I love about your work, George, is that you will go into these disaster-prone areas. You'll get on the ground. And what I love is you're talking to both industry experts, but a lot of disaster victims as well. You have that mix where we're hearing professionals' perspective, but also just someone who survived the disaster and maybe made it through in a well-built house or lost everything in a house that wasn't built as well. Our listeners are going to love this. And so check that out in the show notes. Again, if you're in the top 10 to leave a review, you get a free guest pass to Last House Standing. George, we're going to continue with one of our favorite times of the podcast called Weathered Wisdom, where we asked every guest to share about an extreme weather event that was so influential on your life that you'll never forget about it. It could be something that impacted you professionally, something that impacted you personally, but it's a weather event or a natural disaster that was so impactful, you'll never forget about it until your last day.
Well, originally, it would have been the Moore, Oklahoma situation, but last year with Helene and Milton here in Tampa, those scared the bejesus out of me. I got to tell you, I was standing out in front with my wife and my kids. The water was 4 feet away from our front door. And when you're seeing the water rise and you know you can't do anything to stop it, that is the most helpless feeling that I've ever had. It was unbelievable. Now, we had minor damage. Our pool motor went out. We had a little water in the garage, but nothing compared to a lot of the people around us. Then the next storm, Milton, we evacuated to a hotel because we didn't want to go through that stress. And during the storm, I ran into the manager and I said, "We're really lucky to be in a safe place." And he goes, "No, you're not. This place was grandfathered in the 1980s. It's way below code." And so I actually evacuated my family, as someone who knows this stuff, to a more dangerous place than we left, which was our house. So those have left a mark on me. And you feel it every day when we walk our dogs. Is all the one-story houses have been damaged.
George, you've covered disasters all over the place. How did that feel different being in the crosshairs in your home community? I mean, for Helene and Milton, you didn't get on a plane and fly somewhere. You didn't drive somewhere. It came to you. How did that feel different with that playing out in your home community?
It's a helpless feeling. And the first thing I thought during Helene was, if I have to get plucked off the roof of my house, it's going to be really bad for my brand. I met people at the hotel when we evacuated for Milton that were plucked out of their house because they stayed too long and they were lucky to get out alive. So it's a helpless feeling. I mean, it just and then you see it with your neighbors. We walked by this morning, somebody's still living out of a motorhome in front of their house, and it's over a year later. Our next door neighbors haven't moved back into their house, and it's been over a year. Some people are tearing down. They got 60 cents on the dollar for their lots. It's just a really sad situation to see. And the other thing is, you know, even when you have your supplies, we have a generator because we thought that would help us. There wasn't enough gas in South Tampa to run the generator. So as the power was out for a week, everybody with a generator would have their generator just cut off because the gas would peter out. So
yeah,
the one thing you buy, because you go, this is my safety net, my generator, didn't work when we needed it.
Yeah, well, that's it, right? There's a scramble for resources, propane, gasoline, and short supply. And George, what I hear from you too, as you're recovering or neighbors are recovering, you really see that long road to recovery when it's in your community, right? If you go to Oklahoma, you go to California, you spend a week or two in the ground, you're there and then you're out. I think when it's in our own communities, we see like, wow, our friend is still in recovery mode a year later. It I think gives us a perspective on the long road to recovery, right?
Well, once the Weather Channel and the national media roll on to the next disaster, nobody thinks about that town. We were up in Mexico Beach for Built to Last, Buyer Beware. And since Hurricane Michael, they've actually lowered their building code to a lower standard than it was before the hurricane because people complained that it was too strong. But they're building all these houses with wood in Mexico Beach on the water. It's absolutely insane. So a disaster gives you a chance to see what your vulnerabilities are, what your problems are, and then what you need to do them better. Hopefully that's what they're doing here. But if that storm, if Milton had been 25 miles further north, Tampa would have had what was called the doomsday scenario, where we would have had 26 feet of water downtown, over a million people left homeless. So we had it bad here as a community, but it was nothing compared to what could have happened, like we're seeing in Jamaica, what we're seeing in other places, where the storm just wipes you out. I mean, in that sense, we were fortunate.
George, we look at the Caribbean, a lot of times very small homes, but a lot of them are built with concrete block, reinforced concrete. I've friends of mine that are disaster professionals have said places like the Bahamas, I mean, they're building incredibly well. Why don't we see more concrete in hurricane-prone areas in the U.S.? I mean, is some of that related to the wood lobby? Is it politics? I mean, why don't we see a prolific amount of concrete in our hurricane communities here in the U.S.?
I think people balk because the builders aren't pushing it on them. They're letting them decide what they want. That's why you see wood sometimes on the second floor. Everybody should have a block house. There's apartment complexes here in Tampa on the water made entirely of wood. If you go north to Pasco County, if you go down to Naples and Fort Myers, they're building all these apartment complexes out of wood. Mexico Beach, wood. It's more prevalent. I don't think it saves that much money. And what people don't think is I think builders don't do a good enough job of saying, okay, this is how much more it'll cost to do concrete. And then people understand, but what happens if my house gets destroyed? What's that going to be like for my life?
Well,
and calculate that.
And George, not only a hurricane, right? Just these areas of very high humidity. I would think concrete would go a lot better in the long run than wood, right? With mold and termites, different things like that. It would be interesting if you compare the 10-year cost or the 20-year cost. Probably in almost all these cases, you're going to come out better if you build with block.
You would have to factor in so many things about, now I'm driving my kids 25 miles to school every day. Now my job is gone because the business was wiped out. All our stuff is gone, so we have to replace everything. We're living in a rental house for 2 years while our house is being built. There are so many factors that need to go into that equation. So if you're building a house and it's $10,000 or $15,000, $20,000 more to build it concrete on both floors, that could be the best money you've ever spent because that house is a better chance of being there.
As one professional told me, the cheapest thing is to build right the first time, right? Because if you look at a 20-year perspective, you're not building it two or three times, or like you said, you're not relocating.
Well, yeah, and that's why, you know, a lot of people that are the climate, that are really worried about climate change and all those things are saying, well, concrete's not environmentally safe. Building something two or three times with wood isn't environmentally good either. Building it once is a lot better, and avoiding the disaster is the best thing. You never want to be a victim if you can avoid it.
Yeah, George, I love that perspective. So what are a few action items that people can take to better protect themselves and their family when they're buying a home?
Well, the first thing is to investigate the history of that house. Understand when it was built, what was the code it was built to. Understand the hazards that could happen in that neighborhood that could affect that house. Now with construction, there may be a new development up the block. All that water has to go someplace. Maybe now that's going into your yard. So you need to understand what's around you. Are there any reservoirs or dams nearby? When was the last sewer project done? You need to ask. It needs to be something that you take a lot more seriously than, oh, it's a nice day, let's just go find a new place to live. And that goes for apartments too. If you don't know that that building is safe, you don't want to be sitting there in a major hurricane and go, well, I'm on the fourth floor, I'll be okay. That building could become kindling if it splintered and just blow everywhere. I mean, you have to really think about these things. And so do your work and understand what you're getting. And if you have an older house, there's certainly going to be a history on it, but spend a little more to get it inspected. Understand what's behind those walls. Has water gotten inside the plaster that's on the outside? Are there termites or things that could degrade the structure of the house? How well is the roof attached to the walls? You know, there's things you can do to improve a house, and maybe that's what you negotiate with the person that's selling it. Because if you don't, it's like hot potato. Somebody's just handing you their problem, and they're probably walking out going, phew, George bought that house, and then you're stuck. So yeah,
such good advice to look at this structurally, but then also historically. I've been in a lot of flood-prone communities where someone says, the realtor told me this area never flooded before. Now my neighbors are telling me they've had 3 or 4 floods, you know? So that may or may not show up on the FEMA maps, but another thing I think people could do is walk the neighborhood. Like you said, you're investing in this thing for maybe decades, right? Take a little extra time up front to do your research.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of times people go look at a house at times when other people aren't home in the neighborhood, and you need to find the people that live in that neighborhood and ask them. We looked at one house when we were moving to Tampa, and a guy happened to be walking by, and he goes, I wouldn't buy that house. Every time it rains, the water comes up to the front door. We were like Scooby-Doo, getting in the car and just, you know, hauling away as quickly as possible because we wanted no part of that. And that's the thing is you need to find out what these potential problems are and avoid them. And there's ways to do that. It's just not fun. You know, nobody wants to do that. You're afraid of wasting your time or your energy. But if you don't and you have a problem, you have nobody to blame but yourself.
Yeah, that's right. And the time invested on the front end, you're going to thank yourself on the back end. George, tell us about the release for Built to Last Buyer Beware. We know this is coming out all over the place. Our listeners are going to be really excited to watch it. How can people see this film?
Well, they can go to our website, builttolastmovie.com, and I post updates which PBS stations are airing the film. And sometimes it's a slow rollout. You know, we're going to look into there's a longer form of the film I have, and maybe we'll make that available for people to rent. But it's just on a PBS rollout, and we're trying to get a distribution deal on a major channel where it'll run more times. But they've just got to check back with us. Unfortunately, it's not... It's not a great situation where I can just say, hey, it's going to be on Netflix for a month or 6 months. You know, it's more of a slow build.
George, for our listeners that scrambled to your site, they wanted to be in those top 10 to leave a review and they didn't quite make it. How can they see Last House Standing?
On that very same link, you can rent it for $3.99, I think what it is. So I'm not going to get rich and move to a mansion with that. But it does help the poor filmmaker out. But what it does is it gives you a really good resource that you can use to start increasing your knowledge of things that you can do. And if you say, well, I don't want to pay that to watch the film, it's on Tubi TV. A lot of people have Tubi on their televisions, and you can watch it there on demand for free.
That's great. I love the old school, like Gilligan's Island, all that stuff on Tubi. But then they have new stuff, too, and I'm excited that they have Last House Standing as well. George, could you share your website with us or how people can find you online?
Yes, they can go to if you want to see all the stuff I do, movetheworldfilms.org is my main website, movetheworldfilms.org. And then it has links to my other stuff that's on there. That would be a good primary place to go. And, you know, I hope people will go there and check it out. I've had 3 documentaries that are on there. And, you know, it's something I care a lot about. You know, just one thing to mention real quick. We talked about people that have flooded when the realtor didn't tell them. Don't rely on that. You need to ask the question. Put in writing in your offer, I want the flooding history. Has this house ever flooded before? Because then if they don't tell you, you've got something to go after them for if they lied about it. So they may not have to tell you, but they do if you ask.
You know what I love? You're really empowering our listeners to get out ahead of these things and take the initiative. And like you said, be proactive instead of just waiting. And and then one day saying, well, I flooded and, you know, maybe I'll blame the realtor or someone else. It sounds like you're saying, get out ahead of it, be proactive, do your due diligence ahead of time. You'll thank yourself in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, just having somebody to blame isn't going to make your life better. I mean, it may take years because you have to sue somebody. So why don't you avoid that at all? If you say, has this house ever flooded before? And the answer is yes, then it's your chance to Scooby-Doo out of there and go buy something else. Don't take on somebody else's problem.
And we know that long road to recovery, whether it's a flood, a wind event, you want to avoid it at all costs. People are listening to you and taking your advice. They're going to do their due diligence to try to avoid this from happening in the first place. George, as we close up, what is one last take-home message you'd like to share with our listeners?
Look out for yourself. You know, there's a line in our trailer that says, who do you have to blame if this doesn't go well? And this woman in the film says, look in the mirror. And it's like, you have the power. I can't fix a lot of problems. I can't stop climate change. I can't stop sea level rise. But I can stop people from making bad mistakes by having them start to make better mistakes. And that's my goal as a filmmaker here, is to have everybody make better choices so we don't become victims. You have the power in most cases. Sometimes there's nothing you can do. And then you have to hope that insurance policy is something you understand. But there's a lot of things you can do, and we need to all do them now.
George, really appreciate you taking time to come on the podcast. I think this is going to be a fan favorite because you're actually empowering our listeners to have some action items, some things they can actually do. This isn't just an episode where we talk about extreme weather or talk about how to build a better house. This is really some action points that people can take. And if they listen to it, I think they're going to put themselves in a much better position. George, really appreciate you taking time to come in the podcast. We really admire this documentary that you put together called Built to Last, Buyer Beware, coming out everywhere. Really excited for people to see that and to interact with you. And again, thank you for doing this. I would say for someone in the extreme weather industry, we need more work like this that helps people take action, empowering them, giving some tools in the toolbox to get out ahead of these disasters and hopefully reduce loss. Hopefully no more hurricanes this season, but we know that big storms will come in the future and our listeners will be better prepared because of you and the great work your team is doing.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I read your posts, the weather posts on LinkedIn all the time, and I appreciate the work that you do. So thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, George. Appreciate it. Wow, George. I mean, I don't know what to say. Amazing insights here. And what I love about our conversation is that you're equipping and empowering our listeners. We're helping build their toolbox by watching these documentaries that you've created. So this is giving people action items and things they can do. I always like to think that people in disaster prone areas should have a toolbox. They should be getting prepared. They should be getting educated so that they can make better choices moving forward. That's a lot better approach than being a sitting duck and just waiting for a storm to hit your community, and you're flat-footed, you're complacent, and you're unprepared. The one major theme that stands out to me in this conversation with George is this concept about doing due diligence and doing what we can do to educate ourselves, to inform ourselves, and to get out ahead of problems before they form. This relates very much with disaster science. You know, we have a system, we have a team, you know, we have professionals and a network of people out there that can help guide us. But that said, there's no replacement for doing the due diligence and really doing the research on the area we might live. Keep in mind, you may buy a home that's not in FEMA's flood zone, but that community could be extremely flood prone. So get out and talk to neighbors, do your research, look into the home you're about to buy, who built it, what kind of code were they following, and what is their reputation locally and regionally for building homes that get hit by storms? Do they have a good reputation? Are the homes they build really strong and sturdy to withstand a storm, or not so much? That due diligence will help you in the long run. And this reminds me simply, when you go to the doctor, right, you can get misdiagnosed. It's really on some level up to us to educate ourselves. Same with legal advice. You can hire a legal professional who may be fantastic or may misguide you. At some point, as humans, sometimes we want to be passive and we want to rely on the system or just hand off our problems to other professionals. But the more we're involved and actually take ownership, we're going to have a better outcome. And George, you mentioned that a lot in this conversation, this need for people to educate themselves, to look for resources, and to invest that time, even though it'll require more time and money on the front end. If you do not lose your home to a disaster, if you can minimize the damage, it's going to save you time, save you money, and save you a lot of stress in the long run. So great insights from George on this episode. I love our dynamic conversation. And you know, George lives in Tampa, Florida, an area that was hit by Hurricanes Helene and Milton in 2024. He knows what he's talking about. He's experienced it on the road and at home in his home community. Wanted to mention as well, you can watch The Last House Standing for free. This is that offer that George offered our guest. If you go to the link in the show notes and you leave a review, the first 10 people to do that will get a free pass to watch The Last House Standing. The code that you use, the password there, is Hurricane Howl Special. That's Hurricane Howl Special. It's a special offer for us right here on the GeoTrek podcast. That's all we got this episode. This was a good one. Definitely take some time and watch both of George's films that relate to disaster resiliency. And always keep coming back here to the podcast. Like, subscribe, and follow our content. We love connecting you with people like George that are educating, getting out in the world, making a difference that'll help make you and your family more resilient if a big storm comes your way. I'm your host, Hurricane Howl. I'll catch you on the next episode of the GeoTrek podcast.